This morning's scripture reading is from Mark 10, 32 through 45. They were on the road going up to Jerusalem, and Jesus was walking ahead of them. They were amazed, and those who followed were afraid. He took the 12 aside again and began to tell them what was to happen to him, saying, "See, we are going up to Jerusalem, and the Son of Man will be handed over to the chief priests and the scribes, and they will condemn him to death. Then they will hand him over to the Gentiles. They will mock him and spit upon him and flog him and kill him. And after 3 days, he will rise again." James and John, the sons of Zebedee, came forward to him and said to him, "Teacher, we want you to do for us whatever we ask of you." And he said to them, "What is it you want me to do for you?" And they said to him, "Grant us to sit, one at your right hand and one at your left, in your glory." But Jesus said to them, "You do not know what you are asking. Are you able to drink the cup that I drink, or be baptized with the baptism that I am baptized with?" They replied, "We are able." Then Jesus said to them, "The cup that I drink, you will drink, and with the baptism with which I am baptized, you will be baptized. But to sit at my right hand or at my left is not mine to grant, but it is for those for whom it has been prepared." When the 10 heard this, they began to be angry with James and John. So Jesus called them and said to them, "You know that among the Gentiles, those whom they recognize as their rulers lord it over them, and their great ones are tyrants over them. But it is not so among you. But whoever wishes to become great among you must be your servant. And whoever wishes to be first among you must be slave of all. For the Son of Man came not to be served, but to serve, and to give his life a ransom for many." This is the word of the Lord.
I just returned late last night from visiting my son and his family. And lest that sound like a social visit, we had gone there, or I had gone there, Beth couldn't because of work, but I was able to get there and be with the grandkids for a little bit and read a few books and enjoy the time. But it wasn't really a social visit. It was a project that we had to do. We had a goal in the 4 days and three nights, the total 72 hours that I was going to be in town. Our goal was to take their flooring out of their kitchen, and then after we got all that done and that all prepped, was to lay flooring in the entire house as they're getting it ready for sale. There's some old hardwood, the dogs had kind of scratched, and so let's put that new vinyl plank flooring in. You know, 39 boxes of it, we can do it in just a couple of days, what's the problem? And that's where I was supposed to be last weekend, and the flooring didn't arrive, so we had 5 days and four nights planned then, and it had to be shortened so I could be back here with you today. And I'm thanking God right now that it was shortened by a day, because I'm not as young as I used to be, but our goal was to accomplish this and get back, and the house had three bedrooms, one bath, a long hallway, a living room, and a kitchen, and get all of that laid with new flooring with two dogs. One is about a 7-8-year-old pit bull. The other one is a not even a year old Great Dane puppy. Now, if you know anything about Great Danes and puppies, puppies are playful, right? Great Danes are huge. Put a playful, huge puppy in a small house with five people trying to get a project done. Picture that. Every time I would turn around, I'd be kneeling down, I'd turn around, here was the dog right in my face. And Great Danes slobber a lot, you know. And so I was making sure that if it was any clothing that I needed to wear later in the trip, I couldn't get near the dog. I'd have to, anyway, you get the picture. So as I arrived back late last night from this trip, I cleared my work calendar to make this happen. I made sure that there were a couple appointments I could move, so I had set aside time while I was away. And as hard as we were working, I was thankful that I had a couple appointments to relax and sit in a chair and rest from. But as I returned home late last night, I had two thoughts. The first one was, will I even be able to stand upright to talk with you guys this morning? The second one was, why did I do this to myself? Trying to put so much hard work into, with so little sleep, into a 72-hour period, You see, the answer is simple. As a parent, you love your children. And you'll do anything, will sacrifice anything for your children. That's what love is. That's what parenting is about. Jesus is about to teach his disciples something about love and sacrifice. And what it truly means to be a follower of Christ. Remember that as Jesus got closer to the cross, we talked about this 2 weeks ago, he began raising the bar. He began separating out the crowd and the followers and the disciples. And he said, if you're really going to be a disciple, there's a cost to this. There's something that you're going to have to pay. You're going to have to be more committed. Anybody can draw a crowd. All you need to do is have a flashy siren around and stop in front of a house and you have a crowd. It's easy to get a crowd, and it's easy to get followers. Jesus had crowds that would gather all around. He had followers all around him. But what he was really after was disciples that would make up their minds to follow him no matter what the cost. And as Jesus got closer to the cross, he began raising that bar. He began calling them to a deeper level of commitment. He began to define what was about to happen, as we just heard in the reading, about the Son of Man and how he was going to die. And they didn't quite understand it yet. But he begins to talk about this idea of the cross, and that if we, as followers of Christ, as disciples of Christ, we need to carry our own crosses. We're going to pick up the story as we look at this idea of I need thee every hour. That's a great hymn. Let's go ahead and get to the sermon slides. And but I love that. It's really funny that would pop up right now, because look at the words. You know, isn't that really what being a disciple of Christ is about? Walking with him every hour of every day. We're going to look at the way of the cross today. As Jesus is making his way to the cross, there's something that's happening to his followers. There's something that's happening to the crowds. The crowds begin to turn their back on Christ, and they go from praising and support and give me food and give me healing and all of that to crucify. As we get closer to the cross, there's something that begins to happen to the followers. They begin to follow from a distance. They begin to separate themselves. Even the disciples, by the time we get to the cross, are lost in the crowd and hiding back for fear of what may happen to them. And yet Jesus had been telling them all along what to expect. In Luke 14, 25 through 27, we have these words. Large crowds were traveling with Jesus, and turning to them, he said, if anyone comes to me and does not hate his father and mother, his wife and children, his brothers and sisters, yes, even his own life, he cannot be my disciple. And anyone who does not carry his cross and follow me cannot be my disciple. Pretty harsh words, isn't it? Here's this rabbi, this teacher, some may begin to get a glimpse in the fact that he is the Son of God, bringing the kingdom of heaven to earth, and all of a sudden, he turns to the crowd and says, here's what it's going to cost to follow me. If you want to be my disciple, you have to give all this up. And it's not just that, but you almost have to hate them in order to follow me. And I can imagine the crowds and the followers looking, and even the disciples looking and saying, what are you talking about, Jesus? You've taught us about love, not hate. You've taught us that hate leads to anger, which leads to murder, and we're not even supposed to do any of that, and yet you're telling us if we're going to follow you, now we have to hate, and we have to hate those that are closest to us. And it begins to not make any sense. So there's two definitions before we get into this text that we really need to understand. Those definitions, the first one is this definition of sacrifice. It's a giving up of one thing for the sake of another. So when we talk about sacrifice today, it's literally that. It's choosing to give up one thing for the sake of another. I gave up lots of sleep, lots of rest for the sake of hard work so that my son wouldn't have to do it all by himself and we could get that project near to completion, which, by the way, we did get more than 2/3 of the house finished. Not quite our goal. We were about a day short of completing it, but we almost got there. But the sacrifice that we paid is we're going to be a little uncomfortable for a couple days till our bodies heal. And pray for my son, Justin, because he's going to continue on with the project and get it to completion. But this idea of sacrifice, it's giving up one thing for the sake of another. Keep that in the back of your mind as we go through this talk today. The second one is a disciple. It's not a follower. It's not the crowd. It's a pupil or learner, a follower, a believer. Not a follower in the sense of looking and wanting to know what's going on and following the show from town to town. But someone who's really says, I'm committing, I'm going to be a believer, I'm going to give my life to this cause. That is what we're talking about when we talk about disciple. So as we get back to our text in Luke, we see that sacrifice involves leaving things behind. It involves leaving things behind. There was a time in our life when we had resigned our church in Allentown, Pennsylvania. I'm sorry, in Charlottesville, Virginia, and we were moving to Allentown, Pennsylvania. We had a house in the country out there. We loved it. We owned it. And we greatly under-anticipated the amount of stuff that we had. You know what I'm talking about. Has anybody moved recently? No, okay. Yeah, we have. But other than that, if you move, anytime you move, you realize that there's a process that has to happen, and that's called cleaning out and donating stuff, giving stuff away in order to make that move successful, because no matter what they tell you on U-Haul trucks, they lie. When they say this truck will hold this amount of furniture, this many rooms, they lie. I'm just telling you, it's false advertising. Anybody who's ever rented a U-Haul truck knows that there's no way you can get the amount of stuff that they say that should fit in those things. And I am a packer. When we packed this truck up, there was no room for even a mouse in the back. When we opened it up in Allentown, we had the big 26-foot truck. When we opened it up in Allentown, the crew that was there from the church to help us, the door went up and they went, whoa. There was not a space, floor to ceiling, side to side. There was not a space for anything else left in there. They said, we've never seen a truck packed like this. I said, well, you need to understand one thing. It's packed like that the whole way to the front, and my wife's pulling a trailer behind us. You see, what we found out is when we packed everything up, there wasn't enough room in the truck for everything. We got the truck door shut. Took a couple of us holding some things in, but we got it shut. And we turned around and looked at the garage of our house in Charlottesville, Virginia. It was packed full of stuff. We're thinking, okay, we've got to find a solution here. So the solution was, my wife, who had never towed a vehicle or anything behind her Jeep before, was going to tow a 12-foot trailer from U-Haul. I went over to U-Haul, rented the 12-foot trailer. They're ready to hook it up, and they said, you don't have a lighting package on here. I said, you need a lighting package? They said, yeah, for like turn signals, brakes, brake lights. And I said, okay, what do I do? We had the hitch. We figured it all came with it. We didn't have everything we needed. So we spent the next few hours while they're finishing up and cleaning the house, spent the next few hours getting somebody to install a lighting package on our Jeep. We pull up with a 12-foot trailer. We back it in. Again, my wife has never towed anything before in her life. It was an experience. And I was towing behind the truck, a vehicle carrier, and our car, and one of our vehicles. So my car was literally packed full. The only space available was to drive it in and off. And the wonderful thing about those full car carriers, not the tow behind that has two wheels on the ground still, but one that you can drive completely up on, if you do it right, you can pack a lot of stuff beside your vehicle and strap it in on those things. We must have looked like the Beverly Hillbillies version going to where we moved. And we packed her truck up and got everything in there in the vehicles, and we're ready to pull out. And I look back in the garage, and there is my 22-foot extension ladder. I did not want to leave that behind. And I tried to figure out, can I set it on the side of the vehicle? Could I tie it to the top of the U-Haul? What is this? You know, there was absolutely no place to put this thing, and so I gave it away. I said, well, when I move to Allentown, I'll buy another one. To this day, I've never bought an extension ladder. I still have the attachment for the top of it. You know, when you're painting a house, the attachment has the arms that go out that hold you away so you can paint there. I still had that. I think I finally gave that away about a year or two ago. But I didn't have the extension ladder. It couldn't make the move. I had to sacrifice it. I had to leave it behind. I had to give up something that I liked for the purpose of moving. Jesus comes and he's saying to his disciples, sacrifice involves leaving something behind. And what are those things? He said, well, it's very simply. You have to hate your parents. You have to hate your siblings. You have to hate your families. You have to hate even your own life if you're going to follow me. You see, Jesus is not saying that we truly have to hate those things, but he's teaching a principle, and he's talking about the areas of our lives where it's pretty much encompasses it, doesn't it? Our parents, our siblings, our families, our lives, that's the very things that are the closest to our hearts, the things, the people that we love the most in this world, hopefully love the most in this world. Those are the things that Jesus said you have to hate in order to follow me. What he was saying when he used that word hate, it was more, less literal and more of a comparison. And there's a principle he was trying to teach his disciples. We need to love Jesus Christ so much that by comparison, it's as if we hate those things. Now think about that. Do you love Jesus that much? Do you love Jesus that much that by comparison, if people were to look at your love for Christ and your love for your family, they would see such a difference? Jesus is starting to raise the bar, isn't he? He's starting to set the bar really high now. He's saying, if you really want to follow me, there's got to be a huge gap between me in first place and anything else in second. And that gap is so big, it's almost as if we hate these things because we're so sold out to following him. Jesus is beginning to tell people, if you're going to follow me to the cross, that's the kind of love and faith it's going to take. That's the kind of sacrifice. Charles Childers says this, Jesus is using this strong language to say that no other love, no other obligation, no other relationship can be allowed to stand between the master and his disciples. That there can be nothing that we allow to stand between our relationship with God, between he and us. Jesus is using some really strong terminology. And in Matthew chapter 10, he again picks this up. Anyone who loves his father or mother more than me is not worthy of me. Anyone who loves his son or daughter more than me is not worthy of me. And anyone who does not take his cross and follow me is not worthy of me. Again, now he's tying the cross again into this idea of what's most important. Jesus said, if you're really going to be my disciple, nothing can be as important in your life as I am. And the bar gets raised and raised. So sacrifice involves this idea of leaving something behind. Not necessarily that we have to go leave our families behind and move to Africa and serve God, unless he calls us to go to Africa and serve God. But my experience is he usually says, take your family with you. But in our everyday lives, we have to serve him and love him to the extent that nothing even comes close into second place. So sacrifice not only involves leaving things behind or in a level of importance less than God, but sacrifice involves carrying your cross. It's kind of an odd statement to make, carrying your cross. I love watching commercials. As a matter of fact, I love watching TV commercials more than the shows themselves. And my wife will get irritated. She takes a break and she's like, okay, the show's off. I got a few minutes here to check out on Facebook or whatever. And I'll say, oh, did you see that commercial? That was adorable. And I tell her all about it. And she's like, I really don't care. It's a commercial. I'm not going to buy the product. I don't care. And I love the commercials because in the commercials, there's so many exciting things that happen. Commercials are entertaining, funny, and frustrating all at once. Have you ever seen the Head and Shoulders commercials? You know what I'm talking about? Troy Polamalu from the Pittsburgh Steelers. If that wasn't bad enough that he was always flaunting his hair and its Head and Shoulders and all these beautiful things and the locks flowing. I don't have that much hair. So it was encouraging and frustrating all at the same time. I will never have hair like Troy Polamalu. But then if it wasn't bad enough, now they have him and he and Patrick Mahomes in a competition for this commercial. And Troy says, I do everything 100%. Mahomes says, I do everything 100%. Troy Polamalu says, when I go to the gym, I lift 100%. You see him squatting, he comes up 100. And it goes back and forth, and Mahomes finally says at the end of the commercial, he says, I eat my green beans, 100% of them. I hate 100% of them, and I 100% don't care. And this competition going back and forth to sell a product called Head & Shoulders that if you actually use that product, if it worked like they portray it does, I would come back. I would buy it. I'd buy the whole store. I'd go to Costco and buy it all because then I could actually have hair in my old age if it worked the way they promote it. So commercials can be frustrating and funny and entertaining. They can be heartwarming and sad and dramatic, which is pretty much every This Is Us commercial that you see out there. They can be scary. Did you know that commercials have their own, every commercial has its own name? That there is a Skittles 9.5 commercial. Write that down. Go Google it later. When You're Alone in the Dark. It was a Halloween commercial promoting Skittles. Skittles was never mentioned throughout the whole commercial. You think you're watching a horror show, and at the tail end they say, by the way, don't forget to pick up these treats for Halloween. It has nothing to do with anything else in the commercial. It can be scary. And sometimes they can be thought-provoking, like Capital One, what's in your wallet? You know, you think about some of those, and we kind of chuckle at that one because we see it so much. We see two different versions of it, Jennifer Garner and I just forgot his name. You guys got his name, the actor? Samuel L. Jackson, thank you. The two different versions of it, and one's for the Quicksilver, one's for the generic one, and all of that going on. But what's in your wallet begins to be a little thought-provoking because you can tell a lot about a person by what's in their wallet or what's in their purse. If I were to tell you this morning, take out your purse or take out your wallet and dump out everything on the table here and talk to us about what's in there, you would have a story and we would learn so much about you by what's in your wallet. Some of the men are like digging in right now and checking it out. I can tell you, I carry, because of the number of cards and things that I carry a minimalist wallet. It's sold by Basics. It can hold like 15. I think I have like 20-some different things in here, but it holds 15. And it's great because if I want to pull anything out, I just pull this and I can open it up and get whatever I need. I can fan them out, pull whatever card I need. I can shut it. I can go to AAA. I can fly on this. I can do my credit cards for my business and my home. I can get discounts in every place you can imagine. Through this and through my phone. And so if you were caught in a dark alley and there's two or three people surrounding you that you don't like, there's two pieces of information in my wallet that would say you would want me beside you in that moment. There's a lot of things you can learn about a person from their wallet. And I had gone to, I believe it was a Promise Keepers, a men's convention many, many years ago, about 10 or 15 years ago, and they handed out, during one of the speakers talking about carrying the cross, they handed out a little flat cross for every one of us to carry in our wallets. And I carried that for quite a few years back when I had the big bulky wallet, not this one. And there were times that we would talk years later, people would come up to me and say, hey, Pastor, I still got my cross in my wallet. You know, I don't think that's what Jesus had in mind when he said carrying your cross. But what did he have in mind? You can tell a lot about people by what's in their wallet. Can we tell a lot about our lives by what they see in our lives, about who we believe in and our faith in God? You see, Jesus would teach us that carrying my cross involves self-denial. He's already kind of alluded to that. He's going to go a little bit deeper in a few moments, but he's already alluded to that fact that nothing can be second. Nothing can be in first place. Everything has to be second in our relationship to God. So there are some times when we want to do something that God says, nope, it's not the way you're supposed to live your life. Or there's some things that we want to do that conflict with our time with God, and we say, no, we have to deny ourselves. There's this element of self-denial saying, no matter what it is, God, I will always take second place. My will always be second place to your will for my life. There's this element of self-denial in carrying our crosses. There's also this element of complete dedication. You see, you're not going to deny yourself something unless you're completely committed to the cause. You're not going to deny yourself something unless you're completely committed. Those of you who are denying yourself something during Lent, during this Lent season, you're not doing that just because the church said, hey, we should do this. It's on our Christian calendar. This is something we should do this time of the year. You're not doing that because Table Life asked you to do that. You're doing that because you believe that spending that time and denying yourself in complete dedication to God is going to help you focus more on Him and grow spiritually. You're committed to the cause. That's why you do it. Carrying my cross also involves willing obedience. Being willing to say to God, whatever you ask of me, whatever you ask of me, whether it's in my day-to-day living, whether it's in the verse that was up there, I need thee every hour, I need you every hour of my life, whatever it is that he says to us as we read his word, or as he says, I want you to do this with your life, or I want you to go here, or maybe it's just as simple as being in the line in the grocery store, striking up a conversation, and God says, I want you to buy that person's groceries today. Whatever it is, it's this idea of willing obedience to God. That's what carrying the cross is about. It's denying ourselves, completely dedicated and sold out to a cause, and willing obedience. And that cause, Jesus says, is following me. I want you to deny yourselves. I want you to be so sold out to following me that you're willing to obey everything that I teach you. Now, that's easy to put in light of today. But what did that mean to the disciples? Do you think possibly that the day that they saw Jesus, literally, carrying his cross to the place where he would be crucified, do you think then they began to understand the type of dedication he was asking for? Do you think that maybe the day that they actually saw him hanging on the cross, that they began to understand what it meant to deny themselves and follow wherever he led, even to the cross? Or do you think that when Peter was led to his place of execution and he saw the cross ahead of him, that he had said, I will not be crucified like my Savior, turn it upside down? Do you think as Peter approached that cross, he began to understand, denying himself, sold out to a cause, picking up his cross and following Christ? Or is it possible that the hundreds upon hundreds, probably thousands of Christians who were hung on crosses along the roadway in the Roman Empire under the direction of Emperor Nero, do you think as they hung there and then as their bodies literally while living were lit on fire to light the roadway for the evenings, do you think as they were dying, maybe they began to understand self-denial, total commitment, and willing obedience? Is it possible that today this idea of carrying the cross somehow in America has lost its significance? We're not going to be killed for our faith in America, for the most part, like many are around the world, even today. We're going to be what? Made fun of? Maybe laws will start being made against the Christian faith and what we believe in. Maybe our society will begin to shun us or berate us or challenge what we really believe. We're not seeing any of that happen, are we, in America? In a country where it used to be popular to be a Christian, in the last 5 or 10 years, look at how that popularity has changed. And how if you go on Facebook and say you're a Christian, your friends will unfriend you because you're intolerant. What does it mean to carry our cross today? Self-denial, complete dedication, and willing obedience. You see, sacrifice involves leaving something behind. It involves leaving everything in this world behind in relationship, in comparison to following Christ. It involves this idea of carrying our cross, but it also involves living the way of the cross. Living the way of the cross is simply this. It's a decision of your will to always put God in his way first, and yourself and everything else second. I love that definition. It's so simplistic, isn't it? It's a decision of your will. Carrying your cross is a decision of your will to always put God first and yourself and everything else second. Living the way of the cross is denying your will to live as you want and instead living the way that God chooses to direct your life. It's making everything else in this life less important than the will of God for your life. We finally get to our chosen text for the day, Mark 8, 34 to 38. Then he called the crowd to him, along with his disciples, and said, "Whoever wants to be my disciple must deny themselves and take up their cross and follow me. For whoever wants to save their life will lose it." Now, if we try and save our life, if we try and do life the way we want it to do, Jesus says, we're going to lose it. Because there is a day of accountability. There is a day of judgment. There is an eternal side to this thing. And if we try and do it our way in this life, we're going to gain everything we want in this world, but we're going to lose the battle for the big picture of eternity. But Jesus says, whoever loses their life for me puts me first. And my gospel will save it. What good is it for someone to gain the whole world, he says, yet forfeit their own soul? Or what can anyone give in exchange for their soul? If anyone, oh, I don't like this, because we surely don't have this happen in our culture today. As we're being criticized and harassed and in many ways worse than that for our Christian faith, it's so easy not to speak up, isn't it? It's so easy not to say what should be said. It's so easy not to stand up for what we believe. And yet Jesus says these words, raising the bar, if anyone is ashamed of me and my words in this adulterous and sinful generation, the Son of Man will be ashamed of them when he comes in his Father's glory with the holy angels. Do you think that maybe, to Jesus, this idea of denying ourselves and picking up our cross is important? Do you think maybe that as Jesus is getting closer to the cross and he's raising the bar and helping us understand a little bit more about the kingdom of heaven, that he takes this very seriously? That he wants followers who are willing to sacrifice whatever they need to, that are willing to give their lives in total obedience to support him and follow him and give their lives to him. That's what's changed, would change this world. That's what did change the world in Jesus' day. Maybe it's what we're missing in our day. There's a third thing. The sacrifice involves living the way of the cross. This third part is just, for me, is so, I guess for me, it's the epitome of what I see the Easter weekend to be. You say, well, Easter Sunday, the resurrection, that's important. It is, and I'm not demeaning that at all. The cross, Jesus dying on the cross and all of that, the crucifixion for our sins, that's important. But for me, the highlight of that weekend is neither of those events. It used to be until about 10 years ago. I picked up on something different. It happens on a Friday night in a garden. And it's Jesus saying to his Father, I'm going to deny what I want. I am sold out to this cause, and I will obey you no matter what the personal cost. And in that moment, everything changed. You see, I believe that's the moment where Jesus said, the rest of the weekend has already been decided. I have said, I will do what my Father asks of me, no matter what. It's that decision, I believe, that set the whole weekend in motion. The things that are highlights of the Christian calendar, the things that we celebrate and treasure in our lives. But I think it was that moment where he said to the Father, well, let's just watch it.